Hello, everybody. Welcome back to my podcast here. Kind of a slow day sitting here. December, what is it, the 7th? When, what would that be? December 7th is Pearl Harbor Day, and I wanted to take a day and think about, people that fought at Pearl Harbor. I am a grandson, and nephew of a World War II veterans, Korean War. But we all think back to December 7th, 1941, when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. And I wanted to start this off thinking about that, thinking about those men. We're in the middle of a horrible pandemic at the moment, and you think of a couple thousand lives lost, 100,000 lives lost, 200,000 lives lost. It gives you a moment to pause and realize how precious every moment of your life is, and the people around you. And we're closely approaching, I believe, World War II era losses in this battle for put this light on. This battle for our lives here and for our fellow man. And I wanted to go back to think about those men in Pearl Harbor because it really illustrates the value of what sacrifices and people's lives, and more importantly, our military, who has taken a great bit of a hit with this virus. A lot of the people on those cargo ships, on the aircraft carriers, different military bases, were some of the first ones to really say how bad this was to them. And I'm thinking about the services and sacrifices of our military. So I'm looking here at something I wanted to talk about off the cuff. I'm going to download this and I want a copy of this map. Tells me a good bit of what I wanted to know. I was out trying to do this off the cuff, and it didn't work very well at all for me. I decided that I would try to do this online, and I was out in the field, the town I used to live in. And I got a date wrong, and I feel really bad about it because I usually don't do that, especially something that important. But when I was walking down the hill and flooded by the emotions of where I grew up, it kind of hit me. It really hit me hard. What's my family and people that I knew and the life that I knew living around this area and what it meant to me. So I was born in Somerset, Pennsylvania, and I've lived most of my life here in near Latrobe, put it that way. But neither one of those two places really are two places I would associate myself with. If I bring somebody around here, now I would take them to Latrobe to see like Mr. Rogers' house where he grew up, or his grave, or up at St. Vincent College, the Mr. Rogers. They have all of his puppets in there. That would be interesting to do, definitely. But when I think of two towns that my heart is the closest to, it's probably Jennerstown, because my grandmother lived there, and all my family is from there. And I can go date that town back to about the before it was actually even a town, back when that was it was named after the man that invented the vaccine. Jennerstown, of course. But before that, it was a settlement. And my mother's family had lived there back in the 1820s, the 30s, in some way or another. But old Forbes Road is what I'm talking about. It goes from Jennerstown to Ligonier. Ligonier being the other town. And I was just doing some research here, and I was looking at my three-time, if I get this right, Yeah, three-time great grandmother and grandfather came from this area. And I was looking sort of at my three-time great grandmother, who nobody even knew that we were related to. Nobody told us. My grandfather had a lot of interest in it, but in the old days, people didn't talk about history and those sorts of things to the people. Let's see what this says here, real quick. But what they did was they had. I'm a little under the weather right now. I've been hiking in the snow and it's cold weather, and I've been trying not to catch this disease going around. So going to these places and trying to avoid people. But anyhow, my ancestor Adelaine Strubel, which I knew nothing about. I know she came from Germany. I know where her grave is. I know they were kind of the heftier German type. She married a Mr. I believe it's Joseph Berkey. I'll have to check that real quick before I go any further. But you know, there was no documentation. There's a lot of documentation on his side of the family. I can go back way beyond that to the 1500s, in fact, on the Berkey side. But it's kind of sad that the women's side. So yeah, Joseph Berkey. It's sad that the women's side is not really well told. So I don't have a lot. Why is it blinking? Okay. I'll move my mic back. There's something weird going on with my mic. Hopefully my audio works on this thing. But yeah, on the Berkey side, I can go back to the Berkeys, Kaufmans, Millers, going back clear back to 1730. I can go way, 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 way back here. Okay. And but Joseph Berkey, who lived in 1818 to 1898, and his wife Adeline, 1809 to 1880. So she came over at a time when America was a pretty new country. It was an experiment. And what you had was this town where they lived in Jenners, and then they moved to Ligonier. So I was looking through some of the historical record and saw that they actually lived back in the 1820s to 60s, up until the 70s, I believe, in an area not far from where I lived as a child. So the earlier part of my life. And I thought, you know, how strange is that? That in my DNA, a lot of times I'll go places. I don't know if I totally believe it or not, but my father would say, you know, when he, after World War II, and when he went to Czechoslovakia, he went to Szembrunn. And he felt like he'd been there, and he walked right up to his great great grandfather's grave, and he'd never been there. And he said, "You ever go to a place you feel like you've been there before?" And I said, "Yeah." So I think in some way, these two towns pull on me. I don't know if it's totally a matter of what my belief systems are. You know, it could be number of things. I consider that sort of like that sixth sense. It's a close thing to like synthenasia. People of synthenasia will associate numbers and colors together. I don't have that per se, but I kind of you kind of feel like you do in a way when you go someplace and you feel that. I think that's what it sinks into. It's some part of your DNA in that. But you know, I've for beginning of Ligonier till present, that whole area, my family has traveled back and forth. And I'm no different. The Allegheny Mountains are tough to cross, and especially Laurel Mountain. It even still is. And I imagine when the road was built and the history of it is pretty interesting. I'll give you a little background on it. Fort Duquesne was what they were trying to capture. The British were. And the French had it, and it was where Pittsburgh is now. So all these people from Virginia and whatnot, and a lot of the Scottish Highlanders that were here, because my first ancestors here are actually descended from John Markley, which was the first man to live in this county, which was Bedford, Somerset, Westmoreland. The first man to live there, other than my Native American blood, of course, which I tie back to somewhat here, a lot on the East Coast with the Lenape. But as far as I'll just start it with that because that's what the unfortunately the historical record has. I don't need to get into a diatribe about it, but okay. So Washington went with Braddock and was defeated on the first march. They tried going up through Ohio Powell, which is waterfalls and a few other areas, and Washington was he survived. Braddock was buried. If you go to Mount Vernon, you'll see that the sash, it was a silk sash, and it was woven from the inside out that the commanders would wear. But actually, it was used to carry their body when they were wounded, and that's still on display. And there's a replica of it as well, or a remake in that museum at Mount Vernon. So it's still there. The sash is still there from this time period, as well as the British flag at Fort Bedford. But after that defeat, Forbes, in the year it was 1758, went to make a road up over the mountain and through to Pittsburgh. So what he did, every so many miles, he would make a fort. He made Fort Bedford. There were different. They're all, you go along this road. There's a lot of other ones. There's one that's still lost back in the woods that has never been really looked into, if I believe correctly. But Fort Ligonier was the one that is the one that is the most historically correct and has been maintained, because Ligonier is a town that has a quite a bit of money and respect for their history, and takes it to be a nice, beautiful little small town. And I grew up in a little town, so I did a video, walked around, and there's the Diamond, which used to be a horse corral at the time. It was a parking area, and now it's a Diamond. And wintertime, like right now, the beautiful Christmas lights up. And I walked around that and down Library Hill, where I used to sled ride as a kid, thinking about that. And by my old house, of course, where I grew up until the age of 8, which isn't much of my life, but as I look back, that was the best times of my life. And I was sitting there today thinking, you know, that is a better town than where I'm living now. I have to admit it, as much as I hate to say that. I'm not putting down where I live now, but there's no sidewalks here. Ligonier has these beautiful sidewalks and these little stores. There's Celtic culture, there's antique stores, there's all these little beautiful little stores to go into. It makes you feel like you're going back in time 100 or 200 years, and they preserve their history very well. Where I lived was a few, not even a block, I believe, away from the fort. And as a child, I grew up, so I'll give you my background first, and I'll get into the history of this. So I grew up, you know, having my neighbor would play baseball all the time. He was a couple years older than me. Still consider him a friend, like family. And below me were these people that were psychologists at the school that later helped me out a great deal when they diagnosed me as having a little bit of a learning problem with words, but a really super high IQ. So it was, and they took the time to help me, where in other places I never would have gotten that. If you go up to Ligonier today, I still at the courthouse have a record on me about my having a higher IQ. I guess I keep it there because I had to go and get it when I needed help with something. It's a beautiful little town. It's set up with, and then off in the back there's a wonderful playground I used to play in as a kid and walk it. So for me, walking those streets, the big treat was going up, seeing the lights, going up with Lance and his mother and them, and sometimes sneaking down to Kitchen Rock, which is right on 30. There's a big cliff face under the fort, and there's caves. So we'd go in those and play as a kid, and history was right there with us. And how we didn't get killed, I don't know. But Ligonier was for me going up to the courthouse, seeing the lights, and then standing in line to see Santa Claus, getting a candy cane, which is a decent size candy cane. It was pretty awesome. And telling him what you wanted for Christmas. And it was something I did traditionally, and then it kind of waned off. Of course, as I got older, I don't do it now. I don't sit on Santa's lap. But it was so nice seeing this year they did a thing with Santa Claus sitting outside where the kids could drive by in a car and tell him what they wanted or see him. And there was a beautiful sleigh with horses, and it was just wonderful. Just wonderful. Nothing less than I would ever expect from Ligonier. Ligonier always does the best. I believe this is the first year they didn't have the Fort Ligonier Days, which is a big historical reenactment and festival celebrating the history here, because this fort has a great deal of history. Fort Bedford ha and the other ones have a lot as well. You can go to Fort Bedford and see the original flag from 1758, the only British flag from the Seven Years' War that is left in existence, I believe. But there's no fort there. There's a building they built as a museum to house it, but the fort itself is not as if you went back in time. Fort Ligonier is the one that is, and if you go to it, you'll see that square shaped fort with the buttresses on the front and the opening, and then those pointed edges, because they knew how difficult it was if you were climbing up over a hill to charge those battlements and then come to those points where men could be out in front because the shape of the diamond and fire at you. And that's what the diamond really represents. It represents the fort. It represents the place where those roads, there's two roads crossed and a roundabout to get around them. And it kind of captures that essence of it. So there was a battle at Fort Ligonier, and if you go up to where Idlewild Park is, that entrance, that the old main entrance, that's actually a place where George Washington was scouting. Coming back, was almost killed under friendly fire. He was actually, his horse was shot at, and he had a hole in his coat. So there was almost a friendly fire accident, or we would have had George Washington at that time. But he, at the time of the Battle of Fort Ligonier, it was under Charles Philip Aubrey and Colonel James Byrd. There were about The French had Aubrey, the British had Byrd, and the French had about 440 troops with about 1,500, no, well, 150 Native Americans, I'm sorry. And there were, I believe, about 2,000 regular militia that the British had. So it wasn't a fight that the French would have won, but the British still had 12 killed, 18 wounded, and 31 missing. 31 men missing. Think about that. Out of those men, which was a great amount. And John Forbes, who was the General Forbes that had this idea of going every so many miles, set Fort Ligonier there, and the old Indian Little Hanning, which means middle village, was a Indian path across the Alleghenies he followed. He did a lot of in-depth research with the people. The French at the time did kind of an attack where they did two fronts. They attacked first in the morning and then waited till night and tried two attacks, two assaults, but none of them could withstand the artillery of it. So it was the only battle that really made it to the French and the British in this war, because when the British eventually got to Fort Pitt, it was abandoned. Fort Duquesne, they named it Fort Pitt. And actually, what James Smith reported, what the French Indians said about the battles, they met Forbes' army near Fort Ligonier and attacked them, but were frustrated in their design. They said that Forbes' men were beginning to learn the art of war, and that there was a great number of American riflemen, along with the redcoats, who scattered out, took trees. They were good marksmen. Therefore, they found they could not accomplish their design and were obligated to retreat. He said that if it was only the redcoats they had to deal with, they could soon subdue them, but they could not withstand Osceola, or Great Knife, which was the name they gave the Virginians. So the Virginian military in that battle, even though the French were vastly outnumbered, the French would have won had it not been for the Scottish Highlanders' ancestors around here, which my family's descended from, the Pennsylvania long rifle, and in the blue, the brown vest, of course, the British had, and the Native American tribes that helped out. They were amazing marksmen because they were hunters. They were not military. Their idea of war was a lot different than even so much it impressed the Native Americans that were a part of it. The French had high casualties. They had like 100. The British casualties were high. I'm sorry. The French reported taking 100 scalps and 7 prisoners. Well, the British reported 12 wounded, 18, and 31 missing. So a lot of those people from North Carolina and Virginia and that were missing because they were killed during that battle. And, you know, the Pontiac, part of all this was part of Pontiac's rebellion. So for me growing up in Ligonier, I would have been living off to the eastern, northeastern corridor of, actually, north, I'll just say, I would have been right in the battlements as a kid. And we had a garden, and I remember finding a lot of arrowheads, bullet rounds, the musket balls, I should say, and a lot of different things like that that were from that battle that I would unearth just digging in my garden. So to me, it wasn't a very long time ago, and it wasn't something that, to me, when you go to Ligonier today, there's a lot of money, there's a lot of wealthy people that have things, and they're wonderful people. A lot of them are instrumental in keeping the town preserved to what it is. You have to really think about, you know, it takes money to keep these things running, especially this year. And there is a certain sense of prestige in Ligonier that you live there and you can take in its beauty. And there's a lot of these stores have pretty amazing people they still represent with the Scottish Highlanders and the there's different cultural significance of it. On the way up, even to Lachlan Town, going over the mountain where you can still see where they'd take the wagons and they'd put boards through the wheels and like skid them down the mountain, and there's still carvings into the rock from the wheels. All that history all comes together and it focuses on Ligonier and on Forbes Road, which is what Route 30 is. So I grew up around all of that. There used to be, for me as a kid, the sense in that town that the guy that lived across the street from us, he was one of the people that handled the dealings with the fort, stored a lot of the things there. So I'd get a good bit of conversation and learn a lot. And my uncle Steve, who my dad was in business with, my dad ran the Fort Ligonier Motor Lodge with him. They were kind of co-owners of it, or I don't know how the situation went. I don't really have ever understood or asked about how that really was handled, because it went off on a bad note. But, you know, where the nursing home is, my uncle Steve had that, so I'd go down by the creek too, and I'd see where the Lohanna Creek had changed direction over time when they built the road, and that would have been the main intersection between those two roads, that Indian Path and that the original Forbes Trail. So, to me, history was always very much a part of it, and I took the past couple days and just did a couple videos and wrote a little bit and went back into my childhood. To me, it was a special, magical place at a time when I was just a little kid walking around, taking it all in, taking in history. And I thought everybody had this, but apparently, talking to a lot of people, I had a very unusual childhood being in Ligonier. I knew a lot of very important people, you know, Arnold Palmer, my cousins, the Rodillas and Matericos, and, you know, of course, my Uncle Steve. I saw at that time that, you have to have a certain amount of respect for your history and pass it on and carry it on. It's not about the money. It's not about the. And I'm not putting the people down. There's a lot of very rich people in Ligonier, a lot of very wealthy people that do a lot. I mean, if you look at a lot of these historical things, you're going to see Mellons, Scaifes, all these wonderful people that I've known. And, the one Prosser, was it Prosser man? One of them just passed away recently, and he was a phenomenal philanthropist, did a lot of good. And he's helped to preserve this. But a lot of the people, a lot of the real heart and soul of Ligonier, to me, has always been in the people, kindness, and just the niceness of the people there. It has a, like every town has a dark side. You're going to see people that, well, you'll say, wow, I didn't think people acted like that in any town. But what you see in Ligonier is that small town still, that the majority of the people are wonderful people. And that's what really shaped me as a child to grow up in that. So I went up to Ligonier and I sat there at the diamond a bit and just took in all the snowed. I took in all the beauty of it. And I wanted to read some poetry and take some pictures. It was thankfully not too many people there. There was a woman and her daughter, and I felt awkward. It's strange this year. I believe it was, I forget who it was that said it, but he said that it's very weird, awkward this year because you go to sing a song or you go to do something for online. You're doing this like a poetry reading, and you're out in public, and you're reading it. And for the most part, people don't know what you're doing, okay? And you feel uncomfortable. But yet you're sharing it with 10,000 people on the internet or 10 million people. How many people view your product? And it's kind of an unusual year for that. You feel your privacy is there, but then you're going to share it. So that's what I felt. And I had it. They redid the diamond. I didn't don't do I say it? I'm not happy with what they redid it with. They polished the top of the diamond back to a brass color. It used to be a green when I was younger. It's back to being green again. So it lasted 2 years. I do have pictures though. I can show for posterity that it was brass colored. And but there were all these big trees around the diamond. They cut them down, and it opened it up. It opened up. They put better seating in and other things. It's just a different kind of beautiful. It's not the same diamond that there was when I grew up in, and I'm sure it's not the same diamond my ancestors in the 1860s used as a place to tie their horses to. Okay. But that whole history going back to 1758 and onward, every person has a little bit of that in them. And one of the places I have to always tell people to visit is Ligonier, especially during the holidays, especially during Christmas. You can never go wrong doing it. Always think about growing up in those years as a child in Ligonier and going to R.K. Mellon school. Every Christmas they would give you an R.K. Mellon, a brand new dress shirt. The Mellon family would buy every student a nice dress shirt so that when your picture was taken, you had one nice, really nice shirt. And mine was thankfully a red dress shirt. And I was like in third grade and second grade, whatever it was. I was so excited because I was like my favorite color, And we took flags to the cemetery, to the some of these Revolutionary War people that had fought. And it always taught me that respect for days like December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor, the sacrifices of all these men that we don't know all their names. Looking at this Battle of Fort Ligonier, you don't know where those 30 missing men are. It could be anywhere out there where they died and were never found. And it's a very sacred, holy place to me to visit. And they do a reenactment every year. And when I hear those bagpipes, it touches me because it takes me back to the time in my life when I was a kid growing up and being Clan Graham and related to the Royal Stuart and the Black Watch, which seemingly contradicts itself. Because they were Jacobites. Sorry. But it takes me back to when I was a kid hearing a guy down in my neighbors that were psychologists. There was a house in back of our house, and they had a yard off to the side. And this guy would, he was a, did the Highland Games, and he would practice the bagpipes. And I'd just sit and listen to it. A lot of my childhood was being by myself with Lance and his friends and sitting and listening to it. I was younger than most of my friends, so I couldn't always follow them where they went or keep up, but I learned a lot from them. Ryan and Lance and Craig, my friend Craig that lived across the street, and I think that house has been torn down, I don't know. I have a picture of us. And Craig passed away from leukemia a couple of years ago. And I always think about Craig. You know, I think about that East Lohanna Street going up the hill right over the fort where it would have been higher ground. And I imagine from this map I'm looking at, it doesn't... I'm trying to see this again. It doesn't show it as being higher ground. It shows it as being... Okay, Lohanna Street. It doesn't say. It just says Ross Dim Graham. So the Grahams were there. Okay, my family. Shows the stockades. But yeah, there were the sorry. There were houses up above it, and that would have been, that was the, where the sharpshooters would have been on the higher ground in the trees in the battle, which is pretty, pretty interesting. They had that, you're not looking at the map, so it's kind of silly me talking about it, but, it's a small little fort with a lot of history, and if you go there to this day, they preserve it very well. I cannot read this. It looks like they had battlements up against there, and that's what it was. I lived on a battlement all my life. Never knew it. So, you know, I went up there the other day, and I've been trying to buy things away from the city, the smaller towns, and really supporting these small local stores. I want to end this with that for the holidays. You can buy a lot online, but I want to encourage all of you to, number one, support all these charities, food for the poor, the United Way, the Salvation Army, Toys for Tots. That's the Marine Corps. That's a really important one. Old Growth Forest Network, IMALS. My friend Brian really helped found that, and he's fighting ALS, and, you know, we're really big for a vote coming up, and I want to really push for funding for him. It's the small town, small contributions are important, but the biggest thing is getting that clearances to have those laws in place to get the funding federally for these people. And that goes with pancreatic cancer too, and all cancers. I always support pancreatic cancer because it's what my father passed away from. But those charities I want to put first, because, you know, buying things are things, man. This holiday is not about things. It's about people. And I don't know if I'll make it through this year myself. I financially have taken a little bit of a hit, but, you know, not being able to work, I fell and I kind of broke ribs and I broke hurt my spine pretty bad. So this year has been very tough on me, but I know that, you know, that this year, all these people with this COVID going around, it's heartbreaking, and it's not about the gifts. But if you do buy things, though, I'm not beyond buying things. I've bought things for people. Not many. Just bought something for a friend of mine that I think she'll like, maybe. I don't know. But it's about supporting those small local stores and those little businesses around you in the community. Going back how it used to be in the old days, that small town feeling I still feel in living here. I'm proud to have bought a few things from Celtic culture. And I stopped there yesterday. Love their sign, wear a mask, you know, very important. They really enforce it. They're taking care of their people going in. There was not a lot of people in there. Went in, got what I needed, got out. Price of things is, you know, you're buying something imported from Britain. It's Scottish wool, Murano wool. The price was really decent. It was really great. It was phenomenally priced. I loved it. It was a deal. Like what I bought there, if I would have bought online, I would have paid a lot more. I'll put it that way. They are really, really wonderful people. They're thoughtful. They're helpful. All these little stores along there are run by people just like you. And stop in, you know, or buy online if you can buy from them, but support your small little town stores. Ligonier, it reminds me of the strength that those lights that shine in the diamond and the tree that symbolizes eternal life. Old Tenenbaum, that we can get through this if we take care of one another, if we care about one another, and if we think about our fellow man. I think of that song, Pretty Paper by Willie Nelson. The meaning of that song, you know, it's always one of my... As a song, it stands by itself. You know, Willie Nelson tells a story how he wrote it about a man that didn't have a lot, and I love it. You know, it's very very much a Christmas song. It's very much a song about the human nature. I love. I read it as a poem, maybe. I hope he doesn't mind me doing this, Willie. I really am reading this because this is one of my favorite pieces. And I want people to think about it. Pretty Papers by Willie Nelson. It goes, pretty paper, pretty ribbons of blue. Wrap your presents to your darling from you. Pretty pencils to write, I love you. Pretty paper. Pretty ribbons of blue. Crowded streets, busy feet hustle by you. Downtown shoppers, Christmas is nigh. There he sits all alone on the sidewalk, hoping that you won't pass him by. Should you stop? Better not, much too busy. You better hurry, my, how time does fly. And in the distance, the ringing of laughter. In the midst of the laughter, he cries. Pretty paper, pretty ribbons of blue. Wrap your present to your darling from you. Pretty pencils to write, I love you. Pretty paper, pretty ribbons of blue. I'll leave you with that. And this is again a pretty paper by Willie Nelson. Probably my favorite Christmas song. Because he captures so much in it. Thank you, and I want to wish you all a wonderful and safe holidays. Be safe out there again. These are odd times to live in, but you know, there's hope out there. Look for it, find it. Don't let it hold you down. You're talking to a kid from Ligonier, grew up on the wrong side of the tracks, became a Laurel Highlands author because he had dreams and believed in it, and people pushed and backed him to share these things he wrote about this area and about people he loved and cared about. And poetry in a song always stands by itself, and I've always lived in that belief that that is what moves the world. You know, the idea that the things you say and do matter. And there's nothing that you can say or do that matters more than thinking about your fellow man, wearing a mask, and being as safe as you can. So, love you all, and take care of yourself.